light of this, I find that there are reasonable grounds to believe that the threshold indicating the commission of the crime of genocide against Palestinians as a group in Gaza has been met. Specifically, Israel has committed three acts of genocide with the requisite intent, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, and imposing measures intended to prevent birth within the group. The genocide in Gaza is the most extreme stage of a long-standing settler colonial process of erasure of the native Palestinians. For over 76 years, this process has oppressed the Palestinians as a people in every way imaginable, crushing their inalienable right to self-determination demographically, economically, territorially, culturally, and politically. Israel has attempted to displace them, expropriate their land and other resources, and ultimately replace them. The colonial amnesia of the West has condoned Israel's colonial settler project from the violent history of the very birth of the State of Israel to its oppressive occupation since 1967, the crippling closure of Gaza since 1993, and its military assaults on Gaza since 2007. The world now sees the bitter fruit of the impunity afforded to Israel. This was a tragedy foretold. While the International Criminal Court will have to deliberate, the International Criminal Court will have to investigate, it is my responsibility to remind you that the Genocide Convention includes a jus cogens norm and erga omnes obligation to prevent the commission of genocide, a reality the International Court of Justice recognized as plausible exactly 2 months ago. The time for states to act was then, and as they did not, the time is now. In this darkest hour, the international community cannot continue to ignore that it's Israel's project to rid Palestine of Palestinians in defiance of international law and the world's failure to call Israel to account that has led to genocide laid bare in Gaza. Denial of the reality and the continuation of Israel's impunity and exceptionalism is no longer viable, especially in light of yesterday's binding Security Council resolution. I implore member states to abide by their obligations, which start with imposing an arms embargo and sanctions on Israel, and so ensure that the future does not continue to repeat itself. Thank you.
That was Francesca Albanese, Special Rapporteur to the Situation of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories, occupied since 1967, presenting a report titled Anatomy of a Genocide, during the 55th session of the Geneva-based Human Rights Council. I have a link to the full report, Anatomy of a Genocide, on our website, arabvoices.net. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights held a side event on March 26, 2024 in Geneva, Switzerland, in parallel to the 55th session of the Human Rights Council, titled Understanding Genocide, the Case of Gaza, at which several experts spoke on that topic. I'm going to share with you a couple of the remarks delivered at that event. Let's begin with the remarks of Dr. Nicola Perugini, Senior Lecturer in International Relations at the University of Edinburgh in the UK.
The topic today is understanding genocide, and I would like to start by reading a passage from the New York Times 1982, Ariel Sharon. Israel's troops entering Lebanon were greeted as liberators for driving out the terrorists who had raped and pillaged and plundered. Our soldiers were welcomed despite the casualties that were the inevitable result of fighting against the PLO, terrorists who used civilians as human shields and who deliberately placed their weapons and ammunition in the midst of apartments, houses, schools, refugee camps, and hospitals. 2 weeks after this article in the New York Times by Ariel Sharon, the Sabra and Shatila massacre was carried out. And in December of the same year, the UN General Assembly defined that massacre as a form of genocide. Genocides are justified in two ways: through the brutal sheer language that Basel was reminding the human animals, the Amalek, the sheer colonial language of brutalization and dehumanization, but in settler colonial regime and colonial regimes, genocides and violence are justified also through the language, the liberal language of the law, of international law. This is what precisely Ariel Sharon was trying to do by invoking the category of human shield, trying to put the responsibility on the Palestinians in Lebanon for the genocide that was perpetrated in Sabra and Shatila later. And that's the kind of justification on which Israel has invested for the last decades. The justification through legal work. The category of human shield has been mobilized since the so-called disengagement from the Gaza Strip in 2005, the first war, 2008, 2010, 2009, 2012, 2014, 2021, 2022, the Great March of Return, when peaceful demonstrators were marching in Gaza to return to their homeland. The human shield argument was invoked in order to justify violence. What happened after October the 7th is something unprecedented in terms of scale. So the same justification that were rehearsed and developed in the previous decades were extended, expanded, and applied to the entire population in Gaza as such. A document by the Israeli Minister of Foreign Affairs of November the 2nd, Legal Analysis, defines the population, the residents of Gaza as human shields. And in the same document, civilians and civilian objects are put between quotation marks. That is a deliberate strategy to use and mobilize international law in order to erode civilian protection. But again, what happened after October the 7th is unprecedented. Why? Because we have to combine the liberal language of international law mobilized at the service of mass violence with those statements that Basel was reminding us of. There is a level of genocidal intent combined with the mobilization of the law. The homes of Palestinians are not homes anymore. The mosques of Palestinians are not mosques anymore. The churches of Palestinians are not churches anymore. The hospitals of Palestinians are not hospitals anymore. No trace of civilian life is civilian anymore. That is not simply the logic of war crimes. That is not simply the logic of crimes against humanity. That is the logic of a world without civilians. And that is the logic of genocide through the liberal language of international law, distorted, stretched, readapted, and reapplied. This is one of the techniques of justification of genocide through international law. Take another instance, take another element, the so-called safe zones and evacuations. Immediately after those brutal statements of dehumanization, the Israeli army asked enforced, because that was an act of ethnic cleansing and depopulation, 1.1 million Palestinians to move from the north of Gaza to the south. That was described and presented as a humanitarian measure of precaution, right? But that was de facto an act of settler colonial displacement. People were asked to go to the south. People were asked to move in roads which were not safe. Those who remained because they couldn't move, or they did not move because you don't make me move another time because I have an Akba and I have 75 years of displacement, were framed and designed and designated legally in two ways. Terrorist accomplices, according to the leaflets which were sent by the Israeli military from the air, or human shields. In both cases, they were framed, according to Israel, as killable subjects. Because when Israel speaks the language of human shields, it speaks the language of killable subjects. And when it speaks the language of terrorist accomplices, basically, they are articulating that idea of an entire nation accomplice into international humanitarian discourse. Now, what happened? They told the people to go to the south. People were killed, tortured on their way to the south. Those who managed to make it to the south in the so-called safe humanitarian areas were bombed. Were bombed systematically with the strongest ammunitions at the disposal of the Israeli military, 2,000-pound bunker buster bombs. 500 of these bombs were thrown on Gaza in the first 6 weeks. 40% of them, 212, were dropped south of Gaza, in the safe zones, in the humanitarian zones, so-called. In the same period of time, the first 6 weeks, on October 28th, 38% of the overall population killed in Gaza was killed in the safe humanitarian zones. Mid-November, 34% of those killed in Gaza were killed in the safe humanitarian zones. January 2024, 42% of all those killed were killed in the safe humanitarian zones. So again, this is another very clear instance in which the liberal language of international humanitarian law is mobilized and deployed in order to justify what? Genocide. To justify what? If you transform international humanitarian law into a tool to create a trap and kill, while you're killing also in the other areas, in the non-safe zones, there is no space to go, there is no space in which somebody can be safe. And now we get to the third and final element of this mechanism that the special rapporteur in her report defined as humanitarian camouflage. And this is what we could call the medical shielding. Now, one of the key elements of Israel's genocide in Gaza is the total dismantlement and the total destruction of life-sustaining infrastructures and life-saving infrastructure. At an unprecedented level, Israel has destroyed and produced the collapse of all the infrastructures which can sustain life in Gaza. This is one of the key findings of Francesca's report, and this is one of the key findings also of the South African submission at the ICJ. Again, in its bifurcated tongue, Israel deployed the language and the discourse of international humanitarian law in order to justify the systematic targeting of medical facilities. In the latest update by the WHO, and according to that update, 420 medical facilities and structures have been targeted since October the 7th. How did Israel justify it? Basically, stretching, appropriating, distorting a clause of international humanitarian law according to which hospitals might lose some of their protections if they're used for military activities. Now, in mid-November, using this justification and then acting on the ground with its genocidal acts, Israel entered the Arantisi Hospital for Children. And, you know, in order to justify the attacks on hospitals, Israel said, you know, there are military infrastructures in it. So they entered Arantisi Hospital. They brought cameras and they took a picture. And the picture was a picture of a piece of paper reading At-Tinin, At-Talate, Al-Arba'a, Al-Khamis, Al-Jum'ah, Al-Sabt, Al-Ahad, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Well, immediately after, Israel told the world that that list was a list of the rota of Hamas terrorists keeping the hostages within the hospital. How comes? Immediately after, Shifa Hospital. Shifa Hospital was devastated before the second devastation that we are currently witnessing. People were killed. The hospital was transformed into a mass grave. Israel, 3 days or 4 days before the attack, diffused a 3D video on Twitter saying, you know, look at the headquarters of Hamas, the underground. It was full of a picture basically depicting a military base under the hospital. Well, after they left the hospital and after the media entered the hospital, those claims were debunked, not by marginal media, by those very mainstream media which misrepresented for months and for weeks what was going on in Gaza, the BBC, the New York Times. So this is a pattern. The attack on hospitals is a pattern, a deliberate genocidal pattern aimed at letting Palestinians die while they're carpet bombed, attacked, and starved to death. What does this tell us? It tells us two things. Through this liberal language of international humanitarian law, basically, Israel is searching for impunity. That's how they immediately defended themselves from the beginning at the ICJ, saying, you know what? We abided by international humanitarian law. We have a barbarian enemy. The colonized doesn't know the laws of war. They're savage tribes. We apply international law. This is going to be constantly, in the coming years, Israel's justification for what is going on in legal fora. But this mobilization of international humanitarian law at the service of genocide has also another function. It has, and it will have the function of telling future generations, or trying to tell future generations, how to narrate the genocide. Israel is constantly trying, like all colonial powers, to write history while erasing the colonized. And so that's the function of this mobilization of international humanitarian law, to present and to shape the meaning of violence as legitimate violence so that in the future, in the next decades, people will remember this genocide not as a genocide, but as something else, as a counterinsurgency campaign which had some excesses, but overall abided by international humanitarian law.
That was Dr. Nicola Pirogini, Senior Lecturer in International Relations at the University of Edinburgh in the UK, speaking at a side event held in parallel to the 55th session of the Human Rights Council titled Understanding Genocide, the Case of Gaza. It was held on March 26, 2024 in Geneva, Switzerland. Let's listen next to the remarks of Hamdi Shakoura, Deputy Director for Program Affairs at the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, speaking at that same event.
I start with a quote from High Representative of the EU External Action, Mr. Joseph Borrell. Just a few days ago, or last week, I think, he just concluded an article that after 5 months of devastating war, the actions of Israel, of the Israeli government, give the impression that its objective go beyond destroying Hamas. Well, finally, after 5 months, we have this very diplomatic wording of the top EU representative acknowledging reluctantly part of the truth on the real situation on the ground. I'm not a legal expert by orientation, by training, but rather I lived genocide on the ground. I witnessed part of the genocide. At least the very first 2 months of the genocide, I was there in Gaza. And from day one, as a human rights defenders, we said that the acts of Israeli government and the patterns of the attack are genocide in nature. The death toll, as of now, we are talking about, I don't go in details, but at least 5% of the entire population of Gaza been either killed, maimed, injured, the overwhelming majority again and again. And there, at the beginning, there were a lot of discussion about the verification of figures from Western media and so on. We are talking about 70% or more of the death toll and the casualties among children and women. And this is the case even after the ruling of the ICJ. Even more casualties been reported, more attacks, and almost the ratio is the same, male versus women and children. Almost the same before the ruling and after the ruling. And the bill the figures continue to rise. The level of destruction, the patterns of the attacks on the residential area never change. It's almost the same before and after the ruling. And now we are talking about 2 months after. The second point, we must understand what's going on, the acts of genocide, in a context of 75 years of settler colonialism manifested in disposition of Palestinians, displacement, destruction, apartheid, ethnic cleansing, mainly in the West Bank, Jerusalem, the cantonization, the fragmentation of the Palestinian territory, the OPT, and this is a history, and it's not new. It's not as if the 7th of October is the start. It's not. It's part of a bigger portrait to the situation. It's part of the, I would call, the demographic engineering of the Palestinians in the OBT. The language about go out, the Netanyahu's statement, it's nothing new. We heard it, throw them in the sea, from previous governments. Several times we heard about Gaza. Gaza has been always I would say, and this is how I interpret it, has always been a burden on the shoulders of Israeli leaders, on the shoulders of the ideologists, the expansionist leaders. Gaza, with the densely population, with 2.3 million, is a reminder. We are talking about 70% refugees in Gaza. It's always been a reminder for Israel of the ongoing Nakba for Palestinians. And it's been a wish for Israel just to throw in the sea. It didn't need October the 7th to go on this genocide, but it's needed. It's because Gaza, as a human shield, prevented further expansion in the south. And here is the chance. With all what has been done in Gaza, it's a chance to continue this genocide and continue displacement against Palestinians. We have also, over the course of the 5 months, including the two last months, we documented more aspects of the acts of genocide, including preventing birth. And we documented, and this based on our work in Gaza. Our team are working in Gaza, including working with displaced women. And we listened and gathered dozens of testimonies about pregnant women. The report, anyway, is available on our website, both Arabic and English. And yes, for us, this is another dimension. Preventing the birth of Palestinians, it's been another dimension of the genocide. The last point, and sorry for taking this, accountability. We believe in international law, but international law is not designed for Palestinians. International law and accountability, international accountability mechanisms, are windows of opportunity for victims around the globe, for millions of victims who have been deprived justice and remedy in their own countries. It's simple as that. Palestinians are not an exemption to this and must be entitled to seek justice in these forums. Otherwise, we are going to a complete chaos of international order.
That was Hamdi Shakoura, Deputy Director for Program Affairs at the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, speaking at a side event held in parallel to the 55th session of the Human Rights Council titled Understanding Genocide, the Case of Gaza. It was held on March 26, 2024 in Geneva, Switzerland. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Laura.
Laura?
Laura.
Laura.
Sieben Wind, komma vorne. Mega weich.
Bei unseren piratischen Anfängen hat sich Radio Lora seit über 20 Jahren ausdehnt auf der UKW-Welle. Über 300 Sendungsmacherinnen und Macher senden im Raum Zürich 24 Stunden am Tag auf über 20 verschiedene Sprachen.
We bring the truth to places truth has never heard before. Straight from the
Musik, offener Politkanal, Info, Frauenradio, Kultur, Experimentalradio.
Commandeering airways from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never be recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
Ha ha. Oh yeah.
Dass Laura weiterhin ein werbfreies Radio bleiben kann, brauchen wir eure Unterstützung. Werdet Mitglied oder spendet auf Postcheckkonto.
Ja.
80-144-03-9. Für mehr Infos und das vollständige Sendeprogramm